Get a jump start on 2024 in a new Kia from Robert Brogdon's Olathe Kia. Shop their large selection, including the new Sorento, Niro, and Soul models. You'll score big with low prices, trade assist cash, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit OlatheKia.com.
Radio 810 WHB. Thanks for joining us. Our thanks to Greg Gurley joining us in our last hour as we break down. Always enjoy breaking down the Big 12 coaches, ranking them 10 to 1. Real quick, guys, anything stun you about anyone else? I do. I will reiterate. I think that you guys are, all three of you guys are putting way too much into what Baylor did this time, because they got to do it again, right? It's about here moving forward, and so I think there's, you know, erroneous on your part.
But it's the fact that he has at least put together a strong group of talent before. I mean, he's got some high recruits. He'd been to a couple of Elite Eights 10 years ago. I believe in his ability to go out and find the next group of guys. I think he's going to lose. He's going to lose a lot, but I think what he's done, the fact that he, and this is where I think the past part, even though it's moving forward, this is where I think the past part does play into it, because there is a track record. You can learn what someone's going to do by what they have done to some extent. And the fact that this isn't the first really good collection of players he's put together makes me think he's got the ability to do that again. I think coming off a national championship, he's going to get better players than he got at any point. And if he can win a championship with guys ranked 58 and lower, I think he can probably get back into another Final Four, maybe win another one with improved players, which I think he's probably going to get moving forward. So that's the reason why. It isn't just this year. It's what I think this year does for him moving forward and acquiring talent he previously didn't have.
And I agree with Curtis on all those points, because I do think that Coach Drew has actually figured out a way to – he's learned what works for him and therefore will be able to apply it better with like Curtis had said, with prior success that he's already had. So the other thing, and I think Scott Drew is also a lifer at Baylor, whereas like you said with Chris Beard, who knows if he has success at Texas and he's this young and that good of a coach, who knows if he's off to the NBA. So talking about it moving forward in those terms, I think is always kind of a little bit hard to equate and where you rank different people.
If Chris Beard were sitting at Texas Tech, I would worry about the NBA a lot more. I don't think he's going to be one and done in his alma mater. I do think that the NBA may loom out there for him, but I think you've got 4 or 5 years at least. I don't think the NBA is looming for Scott Drew. Maybe we'll find out otherwise later. But so from that standpoint, if you're saying, well, I think Drew's 50 and going to coach for another 15 to 20 years, and it's all going to be at Baylor, and I think Beard will be, you know, 4 to 8 in the door, and headed off to the NBA. Okay, I'll listen to that. I think Beard is going to be definitively better, though. I think Beard plus Texas equals more than Drew plus Baylor. And again, I know that sounds funny when, you know, you got Drew coming off a national championship, but I think Tech is not as good as Baylor as far as a program goes.
Agreed, and I think what he did this year, I mean.
And he almost did the exact same thing that Beard did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or that Drew did, excuse me.
And he, I'm super high on Beard. I mean, the only player that scored in that 19 championship game that played for him this year was Kyler Edwards. So he lost everyone and was a three-pointer away from going to the Sweet 16. And the dude can clearly coach. He's going to get good players there. So I think he's going to be right up there. I think there's a group of three. I just think Drew's a little higher. I think you and I almost agree on Beard. I just really think Scott Drew's got what it takes to continue this going forward. Maybe not this year, but I think in the next 3 or 4 years, he's going to rebuild that again.
I hear what you're saying in the sense that we're all high on Beard, but here's where I think we're different. I think Beard, like, I'm going to ask the question of Gary Parrish, you know, and I asked it yesterday of Tom Gassaway, and that is, you know, more tournament wins starting right now. John Gassaway, excuse me. More tournament wins right now moving forward. Chris Beard or Bill Self? Now, you can get tricky and be like, well, I think Beard will leave and Self's got that lifetime contract, so he's not going to go, so I'll take Self. Okay. But if we're just talking about it, and you can even say, well, and you know, there's sanctions coming up for Kansas, and so he's going to miss a year in the tournament. Yeah, well, all it takes is, you know, one first round upset as a six seed, and that's the same as having sanctions and not being in the tournament. So I don't really think that that should handcuff. I don't think you should be like, well, Self might be out for a year or even two, so I'm going to take Beard. Really? Is Beard going to go to the Final Four every year so you're eight wins down if you take Bill Self? Mm-hmm. I don't think so. But I think where we're different on Beard is, unless you think that all three of them are pretty much a dead heat, because I think it's entirely possible. I'm still going to go with Self because I think Kansas is juice. And I think Self is waiting, is like a ticking time bomb about to win two championships in 4 years, right? I think he's going to get, like I said when he was hired, that he would win multiple championships. I still believe that. The only thing that'll be wrong about that, the only way I'm wrong with that is if he gets through the NCAA thing and then he says, okay, I'm out, I'm going to the NBA. And the couple million-dollar buyout for the NBA makes me think that that is still a possibility for him. But I believe that Bill Self is going to win, you know, probably a couple more championships. Like if he's going to coach like Coach K and Roy and those guys to like 70 years old in the next 12 years, I think he will. What is he? 58,
something like that. Yeah.
57. So let's say he's going to coach 15 more years. I think there'll be a stretch where he knocks out two in like 58. Okay. So let's say he's going to coach to 72 or three. And he's in you know, better shape than you'd look at Huggy Bear and say. Now he's 10 years younger, but I think he's going to knock out two more. Well, so think about that. Does anybody else agree that Self is going to get two more championships if he finishes his career at Kansas?
I think he'll get at least one more.
Okay, Jed.
I don't know about two.
I'm trying to remove my Jayhawk glasses. No, I don't think he'll get two. I think he'll get one. The list of guys with three is so unbelievable. Not that Bill Self doesn't belong in that list, but I just don't think that he'll get there.
Okay. You're right. It is unbelievable, but he's already done unbelievable things, so I think he will continue to do unbelievable mm-hmm. things.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking
grab
about
the championships. Right. But here's my point. I don't want to get bogged down on that. I just wanted to establish. So I'm higher on Bill Self than you guys by a full championship, and I think Beard is going to go toe-to-toe with him. That's how good I think Beard plus Texas is going to be. Hmm. I think Beard, if he's going to finish his career at Texas, he will win multiple championships. I think Texas-Kansas could end up being one of the great basketball rivalries around. Like, you know, Duke Carolina's got a head start, but if Hubert Davis sucks and they bounce around from coach to coach, and I'm not convinced that Duke is going to be a juggernaut, that they're just going to lock and load. I don't think that they, as a program, are Carolina. They weren't Carolina before Coach K got there, and I don't think they'll be Carolina when he's gone. He's been better than Carolina when he's been there. I mean, kind of. Carolina's won, what, four while Coach K's been there? Or is it five? Was 82? Was Coach K and Duke at 82?
Nope. He was 1 year. He was still a year away.
Okay. So by 1 year, they've almost equaled Duke, but they missed by 1 year. So they've had four. Duke's had five. I think there's going to be a big disparity between Carolina and Duke when Coach K's gone. I don't think that job is as great as it looks right now. And Duke is what we always talk about, a one-coach program. And so, look, if Hubert Davis sucks, they'll get rid of him eventually. But that Carolina job is premium. It's absolute. I am convinced there's Carolina, there's Kansas, and there's Kentucky. Those three jobs are the three best jobs in college basketball. It does, you know, UCLA may be more storied. It's not a better job than those other three. The L.A. thing is hard.
Yeah, the last right? 10 years have shown that.
Yeah, I just don't buy it. I think Kansas, Carolina, and Kentucky are the three most premium jobs. Duke is going to be like UCLA. I think the coaching, what you're going to see for coaches at Duke subsequent to Mike Krzyzewski is someone will win a national championship like Jim Herrick did, right? Someone will go to the Final Fours like Ben Howland did. But that is not going to look the way it has looked at North Carolina. Right, with four coaches now having won national championships at North Carolina? McGuire, yeah. Smith, Guthridge, Williams.
Guthridge didn't win one.
He didn't? I thought he did.
No, he went to two Final Fours, 98 and 2000, but the only title after Dean left was the first one was Roy in 05.
Did he play for a championship?
He played in he played in the Final Four twice, 98 and 2000, but he didn't get to the title game.
Who was the coach when they beat Utah?
They didn't beat Utah. Kentucky did.
Oh, they lost to
They lost to Utah. I mean, they may have lost to Utah in the semifinal.
Okay.
That 98 team that would.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, listen, that's my view of it, and I think Chris Beard is going to make Texas. Like, I think there's a chance that – you want to know if there's somebody who's going to be like Duke and join the Blue Bloods, it will be Texas with Chris Beard. That's my prediction. Like, if anybody like Florida with Billy Donovan, you know, had he stayed, would probably be talked about like that. They haven't been able to sustain that kind of success. Maybe they'll get a different coach. Maybe Mike White will get it going. Who knows? And they'll be there. But if anyone's going to join the Blue Bloods – my pick right now is Texas because they have Chris Beard and all their resources.
It does kind of seem like this will be the final like test of can you win it at Texas? Because if as good as he is, if he goes there and can't kick the door in, I mean, at some point, wouldn't you have to say it can't be done there?
Yeah. I mean, I think you would have said that at Florida, right?
Yeah.
I think you would have said it at if Alabama, I mean, Alabama is going to be a top five team next year.
They're going to monster class.
Gary Parrish said, depending upon who's back for UCLA and Gonzaga, if they have mass exoduses, if they don't get the guys back, then Alabama could be preseason number one next year.
Isn't that wild?
So, you know, but my point is this, and I'm with you. Yes, if Chris Beard doesn't get it done, I'm going to have to really reevaluate what I'm talking about here and say, all right, what went wrong? Is Austin just too much of a party town for kids? Is it you know, they can't overcome the football school? I agree with what Lebo said. It's easier for a football school to win at basketball than a basketball school to win at football. Because I think kind of, you know, you've got massive resources if you're winning at football. That's not, you don't necessarily have to have massive resources to win at basketball. And then football takes big money to win. So I think it's, I don't.
Yep.
I love what Lebo said, and I love how he quantified it, and I love Lebo, but he didn't split an atom, right? When you reverse engineer the statement, I like how he quantified it, but I see why it is pretty readily, but I do think that there is a chance that 10 years from now we look at Baylor and everyone's saying, well, of course Drew won. Kansas was under NCAA investigation, and Beard hadn't gotten to Texas yet.
Oh yeah, that's not a stretch. I could absolutely see it playing out that way.
You look at when Iowa goes to the Rose Bowl, Urban Meyer's not at Ohio State, right? When K-State wins the Big 12 in football, or is up there at the tops, you know, Howard Schnellenberger's at OU. Mm-hmm. Who was at Texas? It wasn't Mac Brown. When Mac Brown and Bob Stoops were there, it was hard for K-State to muscle in there. They did a great job, but I just think when you're not one of those mega programs.
Missouri took some advantage of that, too, and they're four division champions. When they won the two in 08 or 07 and 08, the North was down. K-State was down. Those were the Ron Prince years. A number of schools on the other side were down. Same thing in the SEC. Georgia was down. Tennessee was down. Florida was down.
If I'm going to be wrong on how good Beard is at Texas, this is why I'll be wrong. He now gets the one and dones, and he can't keep enough of them long enough to get the veteran, to get the continuity that you need, right? He kind of becomes, you know, just uber talented, but no continuity. If I swing and miss, I think that's why it'll be, because I think his recruiting is going to be off the charts. I think it's going to be off the charts for sure.
All signs point to it.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk some Royals baseball. The Royals fall today 4-2. The Indians getting a couple of big home runs. Jacob Junis, though, going toe-to-toe with Shane Bieber. That is good news long-term for the Kansas City Royals. We'll talk about that next here in the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
The 7-foot, 1-inch package of superhuman strength and sublime skill.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the good sense, end of the hour answer.
Yes,
3,000 hits, 400 homers, 5 gold gloves. How many players have done it?
All right, I love the question. Royals lose today 4-2 to the Cleveland Indians. We're going to break it down. You can grab a phone line right now, 913-3810-810. Royals fall to 3-2. They were 2-2 into the eighth. couple of home runs by one of the best in the game, Jose Ramirez, the story for the Tribe. He gets two, drives in four, and is the difference in the game. Jacob Junis, five innings, one hit, no runs, two walks, six Ks. Very encouraging. Jesse Hahn gives up one of the bombs. Greg Holland gives up the other. Playing right now, GoodSense. GoodSenseSubs.com. Part of the loyalty club, you get 10% off every time. I don't know what you're thinking. You get 10% back that you can use the next time out. Best loyalty club around. GoodSenseSubs.com. And that GoodSense app, get it today. Ta-dow.
Ta-dow.
All right, 3,000 hits, 400 homers, five gold gloves.
Mm-hmm.
All right, here we go. I'm going to start with Mike Schmidt.
Nope.
No, he didn't get 3,000 hits. Damn.
Nope.
Okay, I'm going to go Cal Ripken.
Nope, didn't get five gold gloves.
Really?
Yep.
Okay.
Two.
I'm going to go, I think, was the award around for Cardinals first baseman?
Musial. Did not get the five gold gloves. Not just infielders, any position.
Yeah, right. Griffey?
Nope.
Did A-Rod get the gold gloves?
Mm-mm.
Wow, this is tough. I'm straight. There's got to be. There's at least one. I wonder if the answer is one. Eddie Murray?
Nope.
Rafael Palmeiro?
Mm-mm.
Trying just the 3,000 and
there's
400 club.
Three outfielders and an infielder.
So I'm going to go with four.
That's right. We get to like looking at names, and I forgot the question was how many. It is four.
I nailed it. I tricked you into nailing
you
it.
You did.
It's four. Three outfielders?
You could line them up left, center, and right based on what they played for much of their career, although one of them played some left field.
What one seems Willie Mays?
Willie Mays.
I'm an idiot for not getting that one.
He just got to 3,000. He wasn't like 3,400.
Yeah. No, but
people forget the 3,000 hits.
Knew he was a great center fielder.
One guy mostly played. He played outfield at the end, but I guess this guy was more first baseman. Now that I think about it, he was a good fielding outfielder at the end.
So two infielders and two outfielders.
Yeah, this guy primarily played, I think, first base. But he won a gold glove in left field 1 year late in his career.
Really? That's perplexing.
Yeah. He had a year in which he didn't make a single error in the outfield. Now I kind of want to see exactly where his gold gloves were.
First base that went out.
He won seven gold gloves. Let's see. He won gold gloves at... Yeah, outfield. I think it was mostly in the outfield. Yeah,
wow.
left field.
I'm bombing that one. So he was the left fielder, and then there was a right fielder also?
Mm-hmm. The right fielder did play some left field, but I always remember him as a right fielder.
Roberto Clemente?
Mm-mm.
No, he didn't have the homers. Boy, I don't know. I'm beat.
The left fielder is Carl Yastrzemski.
Okay.
The right fielder is Dave Winfield.
Ah, Winfield. Yeah, I should have gotten that one because I know he's in that 3,400.
And the infielder is 42 today. One of my favorite unheralded, underrated players, Adrian Beltre.
Ah, yeah. One of you love him.
Curtis's favorite.
I definitely have a man crush on Adrian Beltre's career.
I can back that up. Yes. Yes. I can back that up.
Just one of those guys that, I mean, he's gonna be in the Hall. Maybe he already is, but even at that point, I'm like, I don't think people, while he was playing, I never heard anyone talk about Adrian Beltre. And you look up the end and you go, holy crap, he did what? I mean, cumulative stats is amazing.
Yeah, it is. It is amazing. Royals lose 4-2 today. I don't mind losing this game. I mean, you don't want to lose this game. It was going to be a tremendous win if they were able to get it. When Shane Bieber's on the bump, who may be as dominant a pitcher as there is in baseball today, and you can get him out of the game. I will say this. When you get him out of the game and you're tied, you really want to try to go get it done.
Mm-hmm. You're not going to be in that spot very often. You want to win it when you get a shot.
Right. Royals, we're sitting at – 2-2. He came out in the seventh. No, they got it. They were down 2-1. They got him out, and that run came around to score to make it 2-2. And so at that point, when you've got him out of the game and you've tied it up, you really want to try to get that. That's a big one if you can get a win. Bieber today, 6 1/3, 3 hits, 2 runs, 4 walks, 12 strikeouts in 6 1/3 with 103 pitches. He managed to walk 4, strike out 12, and still only threw 103 pitches. I know he only got through 6 1/3. It wasn't like he got through 8. But when you see that many Ks, that many walks, 3 hits to boot, you kind of go, oh, boy, what was that? How many, 120 pitches? No, did it 103. By the way, Junis, not only did Junis go 5 innings, 1 hit, no runs, 2 walks, 6 Ks, but he went through the 5 and 58 pitches.
That was surprising. I saw 20 through 2, and I was hoping he would keep that up, and he did for the most part.
Yeah, so you're talking about had he gone 9 innings, 99 pitches,
yeah,
roughly, 99-100. I mean, he was basically averaging what? I guess 11.6 pitches, so 12. If he well, another 48, he could have gotten through there and, you know, a little over 100 pitches. I mean, that was, yeah, he had bad. Complete game stuff, you know, to be able to get through there. So that's a great sign for the Royals that he's able to do it. I saw the note, Jed. Is the sound awful? Okay, kind of echoey. All right, let's play it. Let's see what it is. If it's terrible, we'll drop out. Here's Mike Matheny post-game. Alec Lewis from The Athletic, you hear right here on Sports Radio 810. Ask Matheny what he thought about Junis outing today.
Anybody could ever ask any more of a pitcher Jake did today. An aggressive mindset. I think it's going to be a shorter outing and just stay aggressive and efficient. So he just looks like a different pitcher. So just really impressed with how he just stayed the course, learned some things about himself this spring, and he learned something about himself today.
Annie?
Hey, Mike, was it just more of leaving 2 pitches over the plate for Ramirez there for him to get you guys?
Yeah, good hitter. You're going to keep a good hitter down so long. Had a couple opportunities, and maybe can get out of that inning and two chances of making pay. But, you know, this kind of guy can hurt you, especially in a park like this one.
Lynn Worthy.
Hey, Mike, when in the fifth there, when you came out to visit Junis, was there anything in particular you needed to hear from him? Was it just to sort of give you guys a little bit of time there, or what was that visit about for you?
Yeah. Sometimes you go out just to give him a little bit of time. Sometimes you go out with some mechanical adjustments or maybe an idea of how to approach the next hitter. But he knew he was pretty close, and he went further than what I think he thought he was going to go. So just kind of kept checking with him all game. He was feeling good, but you could tell it was starting to feel. So that one was about all the above. Just giving a little time, also giving some time for open to get ready. To Jesse chance to make sure he's ready. But we're giving him one more hitter right there and ended up making the most of it.
Back to Alec.
That's all I can handle. It was good. It was all right at times, but then it was
the reporter sounded fine, but and that's the first time that's we've noticed that this year.
Well, yeah, and as we know on road games from last year, even in the 60 games that they played, where they set up the guys when you go on the road, it's not like the nice place they set them up when they're at the K. Yeah. They put them into
in
like a random
sometimes.
You know, corner where they can just do it.
It looks like they put them in a hallway that's like on the way out to the field, and what you're hearing is the equipment guys packing stuff up in the background.
Yep.
Because I've seen the Zoom where he's sitting, and it's got the concrete cinder block walls, and you know, there's probably a box there that they would jump on a headset and go on with whoever's up in the booth. But now they're doing that, and they're like, well, let's just set the Zoom up here, so he's got one spot where he's doing everything, and it's not the best. So we apologize for the sound quality, but 3-2. Well, we're now, you know, at halftime of the first Chiefs game in the season, and the Royals are leading.
Yeah.
At halftime. Are you, you know, no long range conclusions to be drawn, but this is about as good a victory, or excuse me, about as quality a loss as you can have to get excited about when you can be 2-2 with Bieber. You got a pitcher that can stand on the mound and throw with Bieber.
And it's a guy you.
Our first chance to see Junis in anger with the new cutter, and it looked damn good.
Yeah, and it's a guy that you are. And this is one of my qualifications for earlier this year was if they're getting strong outings and strong at bats from people for whom they are going to count on whom they're going to count going forward, this is the guy. I like this more than what Danny Duffy did in his first start. It's great that he was good, but Junis is a guy you need to be good to kind of move things forward. And the fact that he put up one hit, two walks, and six Ks in five innings up against one of the best in the business. Very nice outing. You want to win it, but I'll take it. If you're going to lose, this is the kind of game you want to lose.
You want less hits than innings pitched? Check. By a wide margin, you want at least a 2-1 strikeout to walk ratio, 3-1. Check. You don't want much more than a base runner per inning. He had 3 in 5 innings. Check. I didn't see a lot of loud hits. I mean, we mentioned Duffy the other night, and I still think that was a very encouraging performance. But there were some loud outs with guys on base, some well-hit outs that just were right out of glove that helped him out. No, this was a more dominant performance than what we saw out of Danny Duffy from Jacob Junis. And you could just tell with him striding around on the mound that he looked much more confident.
Yep. A little bit of swagger. Just a little at ease, not fidgety or anything. I picked up the same thing watching him out there. He looked like he felt comfortable.
If you go back and read Alec Lewis's great story in The Athletic about what he did to come back with this cutter and a changeup and working with his brother becoming kind of like a pitching guru and getting into the business of coaching pitching, it's a great story, first of all. It's a great read from Alec Lewis. But one of the things he talked about was that he messed with it, and last year he kind of messed with it, and then he lost his slider. And that's one of the things I was watching here. There was still plenty of slide in the slider, right? It wasn't like, you know, he brought the cutter out and he got a bunch of minor league hitters out in spring training. Now here's the big boys and the slider's not sliding, and so he's got a cutter but he has no slider. He looked really good. He looked really good out there today for the Royals. That's encouraging.
And
I mean, now that's real depth of starting pitching. Now you have, if the season goes awry, you have Danny Duffy and Mike Minor that are veterans. Duffy in his final year of his deal. Minor has one more year in his deal. And I think Junis has two more years in his deal. I'm not trying to ship any one of these three guys out, but if you do fall out of the race, all three of those are pieces that teams will go trade for. Jeff Passan said it. Like, pitching is what brings back the premium returns at the deadline. It's not really the position players. It's the pitching at deadlines. And that's three guys that all could be very attractive. Now, if they are attractive, it means they're very good for the Royals, and it means something else has gone wrong somewhere else. If you know, if they're all pitching well, and yet they're still, you know, bailing on the season. But man, I think a lot to like in this game. Some of the hitting stars: Sal Perez hits his second home run of the year as he gets a solo shot. Walks in the game as well. The other thing that's encouraging: they did draw 4 walks. Overall, Kyle Isbell doesn't get a hit, but walks and scores. That's encouraging. Andrew Benintendi got a hit and a walk. I thought his at-bats looked better, particularly when you consider who he was against.
And who he's,
you
know, what his struggles have been of late.
Yeah, even battling and fouling off, he was, you know, getting the barrel of the bat on the ball. He was just maybe a little bit late. But I thought that was very encouraging. If Benintendi's going to hit, the lineup looks better. We know at some point they're going to get Mondesi, although we heard Alec Lewis tell us yesterday that he thinks he's going to be out for a full month, which is a little bit scary. But, you know, Nicky Lopez, if he's the guy that's filling in down at the bottom, 1-for-2, drove in a run, walked, you know, quiet as it's kept. Lopez, 438, 474, 438.
We'll take it.
None of those numbers are going to hold, right?
No,
but
no.
But I could see, and, you know, 285, 340, you know, 385.
And as long as someone doesn't see that and go, let's move him up a little bit. You know, he's probably doing, you've said this before, he's probably doing what he's doing if he's succeeding because of where he's at. Leave him where he is and let someone else pick up the slack in the upper part of the lineup if you think that needs to be.
It's something that's just baffled me forever about this team, but they're not the only team that does it.
Oh, yeah.
But it is very important. To that point, Curtis, yes, it's very important that Andrew Benintendi hit so that they, you know, they don't have to feel pressure to push him up in the lineup. But I will say this, you know, the point is, how can you not be one of the 25 best guys, not be good enough, you know, one of the best 13, 14 position players? You're not good enough to be that. But then one day somebody gets hurt, and now all of a sudden you're the first, second, third best hitter on the team. Like, if you're going to bat first or second, which is where the Royals will often be putting a guy in when they call him up, all of a sudden you've gone from not in the top 15 to being third best. That doesn't compute.
No. It never has. And it has happened with alarming frequency over the years.
I mean, it either means you don't know what you're doing, or you're terrified of having to put, like, Hunter Dozier batting second. By the way, Hunter Dozier back for the ball club, 0-for-4 with a strikeout today. But, like, you know, if Benintendi's not going to hit and you got to put somebody up there at two, just move Santana up. Just move everybody up. Santana 2, Perez 3, Soler 4. Just move. Get all the good hitters up. Don't get too crafty with it. Stack the lineup with the best hitters at the top and make their pitching see him as many times as possible. That's the key to scoring runs in the modern game of baseball. Not that difficult.
Nope.
913-3810-810. Let's take a break. Royals lose today 4-2. They fall to 3-2 on the season. That now puts them, sitting just behind. Let me update this because I didn't have the game. Puts the Royals now one half game behind the Minnesota Twins, who I believe they won earlier today. Is that right?
Yes, beat the Tigers.
Beat the Tigers. After losing to the Tigers in walk-off fashion yesterday, they beat the Tigers today, Curtis tells me. Yes, 3-2 win over the Tigers. So they're now a half game back of the Minnesota Twins. 913-3810. You're listening to the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB, talking some Royals baseball. Royals fall today 4-2. Couple of two-run home runs from Jose Ramirez due in the Royals. Jacob Junis, though, the bright spot. 5 shutout innings and making the spring numbers look legit. Felt like he had discovered a new pitch, the cutter, and it worked well today. 5 innings, 1 hit, no runs, 2 walks, 6 strikeouts, needed just 58 pitches to go through 5. The home runs given up by Jesse Hahn and Greg Holland. Do you have a guy? I mentioned this yesterday with Alec Lewis as to who will close. Do you have what you think this bullpen is going to settle down to be in your head?
Not really. It's just too many. They've been moving guys in and out of roles. There seems to be no clarity yet. He's still probably trying to figure things out. I don't have what I would say was anyone who's locked into any role.
Scott Barlow, who today went 1 inning, 2 hits, no runs, 3 Ks, Jacob Brents, isn't it Jacob?
Mm-hmm.
Brents, the hard-throwing lefty?
Yep.
He goes 2/3, no hits, no runs, no walks, 1 strikeout. They've been maybe the 2 most effective overall, neither one of them allowing a run yet on the year. I'm not so sure that Scott Barlow isn't the guy who belongs back there. Or is it Jacob Junis making his way to the back of the pen? Kyle Zimmer's yet to give up a run. Josh Stalmont's got 1 inning, hasn't given up a run. Kyle Zimmer's got 3 2/3, a hit, 2 walks, 4 Ks. I mean, there's a lot of arms. I know Greg Holland and Wade Davis are the guys that have been there and done that. But the question is, can they do that at this point in their career? I think you'd love for them to be the guy and let everybody else set up in front of them.
Yeah, that's the ideal.
Yeah, continue to mature, but there's only so many bullets. You know, the pitchers always talk about there's only so many bullets in the chamber. And I think for a reliever, that's such a max effort exercise these days. there's really only so many bullets that you can't have a guy like if he's blowing people away, you know, well, we'd like him to be a little bit more seasoned before he's out there. And I get it. The ninth inning's different. Jeff Montgomery has always said that, and I think he's absolutely right. The ninth inning is different. But when you've got a chance, if he can handle the ninth, there's no point in saving it, you know. Head him back there. So, it's a work in progress. Time will tell. We'd like to see them pitch better. Brad Keller goes tomorrow against the White Sox. He gets a chance to pitch a lot better than he did on opening day. I expect him to pitch a lot better than he did on opening day. But now you're getting to a point where there's real, you know, if Keller is Keller and Singer is Singer, as we hope they are. I thought Mike Minor had a it wasn't technically a quality start, but, he kept them in the game and they won. After the first inning, he was very good. Duffy looking good, Junis looking good. And then all that pitching on the way. Now there's a lot of pitching to be able to move for whatever you need to finish off that lineup.
Yeah, and you don't have, a lot of times you're sending guys out when you're kind of mopping up the season, but if they need a bat, we don't know who's going to be healthy toward the end of the season, or who's going to be hitting or who's not going to be hitting, but if you have enough guys, I mean, they can't all pitch in October, and if you're kind of pushing that direction, you can pick out a guy you think you can do without, maybe, or find the guy who's has the most attractiveness that you're not relying on. Dayton Moore, he said this the first day he took the job, about pitching being the currency in baseball. I mean, why not just stack that stuff up, man? And if you don't have to use it, great. I mean, you don't have to use it, but it's great to know it's there if you do.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, that's the reason why I think you can be encouraged that the Royals, whether they stay in contention this year, which they are now, and I think everybody should enjoy it, enjoy the ride, enjoy the journey. It's not just about the finals. Like, if you're going to just sit and be pessimistic until they get to September and be like, okay, now I'm on board, you will have missed a lot of great nights of Royals baseball. And this was a good day. I mean, it's baseball. You know, 60% winning puts you in the absolute driver's seat. It's, you know, teams don't win 75% of their games in baseball. And so when you go up against a bona fide ace like this and you've got the Indians on the rope and make them plow through that bullpen, this was a good quality contending team type of loss for this ball club. And if they're going to remain in contention, the good news is whether it's moving, you know, prospects for guys that can play right now or moving guys that are up right now for more depth, there's a reason to believe that there's more assets than a lot of people would have thought the Royals had coming into this year.
The burnt end of the hour question, brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue in Olathe, Leawood, and the original in the gas station at 47th and Mission.
All right, how many consecutive games has Zion Williamson had 20 points while shooting 50% from the field? Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.